That soothing, unruffled beat from Ray Lynch's Clouds Below Your Knees signals that it's Thursday night, 10 o'clock, and it's time for So What's Your Story, the only program originating in Houston devoted entirely to storytelling, right here on commercial-free, listener-sponsored KPFT 90.1 FM, the coolest place on your dial where we spotlight a variety of tellers, from starters to stars, who share at least one thing in common. Each is an exceptional person who takes us on profound and sometimes fanciful treks with remarkable stories, from heart-rending narratives to enchanting folk tales, and then return us safely to the present. I'm your host, Dr. Hank Rubicek, Professor of Communication at the University of Houston Downtown, along with Roxy Russell, charged with working the boards and stepping in just a bit. You know, a perpetual theme on So What's Your Story is that storytelling can connect human beings. Now, this can happen in a lot of ways. Some stories help us to reach great revelations by leading us through darkness, only to find the light that lifts our souls. Other tales force us to meander through obscure paths, sifting through the proverbial rubble before we're given a vision of clarity. Almost always, stories take us inside a curious world before exposing us to the timeless wisdom that was implanted so carefully within the rhythm of its words. The storyteller feeds heavily on things like understanding and compassion. And few things feed on understanding and compassion more than faith. Now, faith isn't exclusive to religion, but religion is a prevailing referent. Interfaith is about the powerful interconnections we feel with each other, and the stories that reinforce this often yield formidable lessons. I've had the honor to have some of Houston's most prominent clergy dispense some great tales of faith, and we're going to continue that pattern tonight with my newfound friend, Rabbi Laura Sheinkopf. Raised on Cape Cod, Rabbi Sheinkopf received a B.A. in comparative religion with honors from Columbia University. She attended Hebrew Union College as a Wexner Graduate Fellow and earned a Master of Hebrew Letters and Rabbinic Ordination. She serves as a Rabbinic Associate at Congregation Jewish Community North, and besides being an ordained rabbi, she writes for a variety of publications. She is a regular contributor to Interfaith Houston, and her work is featured in Kaddish, Women's Voices, winner of this year's Jewish Book Award for Contemporary Jewish Life and Practice, and it's a beautiful book. Rabbi was so kind enough to give me a copy just a little while ago, and it's just filled with beautiful, rich narratives. Welcome.
Thank you.
I'm glad you're here, finally.
Me too.
And I know you're so young, so this isn't past your bedtime.
That's right.
Right, because most people here,
right.
I mean, the average age is deceased. The average person
right.
Shows up. So you're so young, we don't know what to do. Right, Roxy? That was a joke. Roxy is back there. She doesn't know what she's doing, but we're teaching her. We really are. Laura, your resume is so extensive, and Roxy found you at the Moth of all places, which really is a terrific venue for fledgling young storytellers. And tell us a little bit why stories. And this is a tough question because, like you, I love stories, and we were raised in similar cultures whereby storytelling was such an integral part of the way that we learned. But why stories? What do you love about stories so much?
Well, I think, the reason I became a rabbi and didn't become a professor of religion necessarily is because I was really interested in the way that people interact with the world and what they drew from that. And I think stories are the only way that we really hear that truth. And even in writing, if you're telling a story to me, there was something more interesting and unpredictable about a human being's story and their life than a well-thought-out sort of recitation of ideas.
Yeah, that's a beautiful way of phrasing it. I've said this many, many times to listeners that my grandmother was the consummate storyteller. When I asked her a question, everything had to be in story form. If
right.
I asked her, what's for dinner? She said, well, there's a story about this little boy at the carnival. And I'm thinking, what?
Yeah.
So for the next 20 minutes, I had to listen to the little boy at the carnival before realizing that I should never ask her what's for dinner again. But I had to listen to the story.
Right.
Now, tonight we're going to be talking a little bit about interfaith. And one of the things that people always want to know is whether or not you can have faith without religion.
Mm-hmm.
Are they inextricably related?
Well, I mean, the word faith is sort of it's a very it's not well defined, really, or it's defined differently for different people. But I think that when we're talking about faith, we're not talking about finding reasons. We're talking about finding meaning. And so in order to discover meaning in something, you have to tell it the way it happened to you and what you, changed you about it. And in that change, I think, is where faith comes.
Yeah, that's beautiful. So it really has to unfold in your mind. You really have to internalize that picture.
Right.
And just let it unfold. You have a story that you published with a very unique, to say the least, topspin, interfaith topspin. I think that's...
I've never heard that. I said topspin.
Right? Let's just say that, which I think defines beautifully, in my mind at least, the essence of tonight's theme. And it's entitled, "It's Not What You Say, It's Where You Stand."
Right.
Share that story with us.
Okay. Well, as a rabbi, I've done a lot of invocations and benedictions for community events and gatherings. And I think of it as a really good moment to teach people about Judaism. Coming from the liberal East Coast circles where I was raised, being a female rabbi is not all that interesting or unusual. But down here, it is different, and there are a surprising number of people who know very little about Judaism, and even fewer who are aware that there are female rabbis. So if I do a cameo appearance at a non-Jewish event, it goes a long way. A lesson that I learned when I came here right after rabbinic school, I did a panel discussion on something, and afterwards an adorable little old lady came up to me and held my hand and said, "I am so glad that they invited the Jewish here today."
The Jewish.
And honestly, I was very touched by that, because clearly this is a woman who didn't interact a lot with Jews, otherwise she would never have used the phrase, the Jewish. And the fact that she came over to me, was a real sign of success in some way that we had connected, or she felt like she could do that. But I always like to laugh about it anyway. So I've always done a lot of interfaith work. And my Judaism, you know, being from Cape Cod, which is not the Jewish metropolis, I came to my Jewish faith by being in a mixed crowd. You know, the boarding school I went to was founded by an evangelicist, and I learned how to sing every hymn there was in the book and Christmas Vespers. And so I became who I was in contradistinction to other faiths in a positive way, not a negative way. So several years back, I was asked by an acquaintance who's a wedding planner to give an opening prayer for a meeting of an organization that raises money for worthy causes, and it's an organization of drag queens. It's a national organization. And they asked if I could come and do the opening benediction for their meeting, because he was being installed on the board. And I have to tell you, under normal circumstances, coming from, let's see, you know, I grew up on Cape Cod, I went to school in New York, I'm obviously very well connected in the arts and the world. Drag queens are, you know, it's not a big deal to me. So I would have normally said yes, yes, but I had just recently separated from my husband, and it wasn't a good time. And I decided to step away from being a pulpit rabbi a few years before, and I really didn't have a place in the community, and I was feeling rather bad about myself. But I said okay, and then he said, "Yeah, we figured you wouldn't have anything going on because it's Valentine's Day." That kind of hurt, but I pretended that he meant... because it is a St. Valentine, but I think he was meaning something about me being single. So we just overlooked that, and I went down. And, of course, I couldn't even find him because everyone was in drag. And I was exceptionally unexceptional in that crowd, very small. And I understand how to perform, so I tried to conceal it, but it was a really tough time for me. And I felt somehow shut out of my own community, even though that was in my head, I think. So all that kept going through my head was that line from Angels in America where he says, "You know things are bad when even drag is a drag." And that's kind of how I felt. So I got down there, and they called me up to give my benediction. It's a crowded bar. Everyone's in drag. Very noisy. When you speak at a synagogue or a church, there's always someone clanking around in the kitchen or people talking in the back, the microphone pops, right? Not these guys. They had the microphone set up to me beautifully, modulated already for my voice, and a pink lighting to make me look better. And I got up there and opened my mouth, and it was like the seas parted. Like you could have heard a pin drop. And I don't even remember exactly what I said. I, actually talked about the reason I named this story, It's Where You Stand, is because I actually referenced a part of Genesis where Adam has eaten an apple, right? And he suddenly is ashamed, and he goes hiding from God, which is strange, right? And God says, Adam, where are you? Which is also strange because it's one garden, one man. Why would God not be able to find this person, right? Yeah, yeah. And so the rabbis say he really wasn't asking, where are you? He was asking, who are you? And that's why eventually what Adam had to say was, Hineni, here I am. Hineni is not the same in Hebrew as saying, Ani po, I'm just here. It's an existential, a deeply felt acknowledgement of where you are in life and why that makes you who you are. And so I said something like that. And I mean, I just remember seeing tears in the eyes. I remember seeing the false eyelashes, being very impressed with those and how moved they were. And it was an incredibly important moment for me because it made me realize that, first of all, it took me out of myself. It also showed me, again, the power of sharing yourself and your story, even if I wasn't doing it explicitly, but putting myself out there, right? That is how we expand in the world. It is not by contracting. And I felt that was a tremendous gift to me. So I go down there as much as possible because they know how to raise money, too. They're very entertaining. It was like a more valuable religious experience than almost anything I had done up until that point.
That's a beautiful story. And, you know, I love the way you tell that story, too, because you don't know it's a story. It doesn't sound like a story. It sounds like a mini
sermon.
I don't
know if that's good or bad.
Well, it's marvelous. It's marvelous because it's so natural and it unfolds so naturally. It's sort of it's first person, third person. You weave things in and out. It's very parable-centered.
Mm-hmm.
That's a great story, and I loved it when I read it, but it's much better when we even hear it. We're going to talk about this some more because there's a lot to draw from this story, an awful lot. You are listening to KPFT 90.1 FM. This is Hank Rubichek with Roxy Russell. And you are listening to Rabbi Laura Sheinkopf talk about the essence of interfaith. And we're going to be listening to that a little bit more. But right now, you are listening again to 90.1 FM. It's 10:12. And it is Houston 89.9 and Galveston 89.5. I can't talk tonight. I'm so mesmerized by the story. And 90.3 in Livingston. Laura, talk to us about what we're going to get out of the story. What should we get from this story? There are a lot of things I know, but...
Yeah, I think there are a lot of... I mean, one is that, you know, I was trying to think of this when you said I was raised on Cape Cod. Mm-hmm. And I think right now... there seems to be what I believe is a misperception out there that difference, that religion is about all coming to an agreement about things, right? When it's actually the multiplicity of viewpoints and the ways we live that, to me, affirms that there is something divine. So if I see a multiplicity of ways answering a similar issue that human beings have, to me, that's greater evidence that it's really important. And I don't look for one interpretation. And that's a very Jewish way of, you know, we have this joke, like, right, two Jews, 10 opinions. And it's really true.
Yeah.
But it's infuriating, but to me, it's more truthful. So what I get out of that is, is that for as much as possible, in order to make my faith true, I have to be open to the experience of others.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it just sort of dies. It becomes like a relic.
I see your story as an anecdote for narrow-mindedness and prejudice. It really is a great way to, beautiful way to solve problems. You know, I'm not sure if Nelson Mandela was referring to the power of story when he exclaimed, as we let our own light shine, we unconsciously give other people permission to do the same.
Right.
But it reinforces my belief that stories really do serve as a conduit for building some interfaith connections. And I think that your story really does demonstrate that a great deal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously, the show is short. And it's frustrating, but you've got some other anecdotes for us, right?
Oh, sure.
Yeah,
yes.
Share one with us.
Well, I think One of them was Texas, you know, because I was raised on the East Coast. And then when I came down here, you know, I'm raising Jewish kids in Texas. And, you know, there's a part of me that's always people use religious terminology and talk about faith more freely in the South, which I think is actually wonderfully positive, but unaccustomed. And sometimes you get worried that your kid is going to hear something that would be potentially anti-Semitic or something. So one day, so there's a, most people don't realize this, but Easter is the only holiday on the Christian calendar that remained on the lunar calendar. So it falls the same week as Passover every year. Our holidays are on the lunar calendar. So Passover is a meal, basically, provides the basis for a telling of a story. It is your show. It really is. It's a meal where every food is symbolic of, you know, a different aspect of the story. And so we had just had a Seder, and I had written a children's play. And my son, we were living in Austin, and we had never seen those cascarones, the eggs that are filled with confetti that you throw. And so my son was sitting at the kitchen table and eating his 12th egg of the day. And God knows how high his cholesterol is during Passover. I don't really like to think about it. And he said to me,
you know, our food, it's really amazing that any of us are alive.
It really is, right?
Exactly.
When you see schmaltz, which is animal fat, on the table.
Which I happen to love with hard salami and salt.
Exactly. Yes. And then they give you a referral to a cardiologist on the way out.
Don't eat that candy. Have your schmaltz
first.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. It's sick. So my son is sitting there at the table and he says, out of the blue, Mom, who killed Jesus? Mm-hmm. And you know what I'm thinking. I'm trying not to, you know, I said, oh my God, someone has said something to him, right? So I turn around and being schooled as I am in parenting, I only answered what they ask. That's a very good rule, by the way, if anyone's listening. And I said very calmly, the Romans. Yeah. And he said, he looked at the egg and he said, but did they throw eggs at him or something on the cross? He could not figure out.
That makes good sense to me. I've never, ever.
I've never got that question.
I've never understood why eggs have anything to do with
it. But you know what? In all seriousness,
though, sounds good to me.
I never even thought about the whole egg thing. And I know from studying Judaism, we have an egg, too, on the plate. It's all about fertility. And I know that. But you forget those questions, right, when you're grown up. Yeah. You forget those things, right?
Sure.
And one reason that I do tell stories endlessly is because I feel kind of like it's a spiral staircase, and getting close to the truth requires us to do a little bit of winding our way through and interacting with those questions. So
I think so. You know, I don't know. Religion, I've always appreciated religion. I always thought I understood it, but now I don't. But yet I feel more religious in a way.
Hmm.
You know, I kind of do. It's always... You know, the notion of spirituality and religion always bothered me because when you're on dating sites, so here's a good one, right? Are you religious? Are you?
Yeah.
Well, I'm not religious, but I'm spiritual. But you know what?
What does that
mean?
Right?
I mean, I don't think that's possible. I really don't.
Yeah, I think in all of our pluralism, we've become very, we don't define these terms.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just talking to a colleague, actually a minister today, about this, that in some ways, you know, we're so afraid of offending each other that we don't have substantive conversations anymore because we believe mistakenly that faith has to divide us. And it's actually the opposite.
That's
because
a wonderful point.
If I walk into a room of a patient who is struggling with illness, I guarantee you that the issues that he is dealing with are the same whether he is Jewish, Christian, Muslim, whatever.
Yeah. That's a beautiful point. You know, Rabbi Karf has been, many people know who Rabbi Karf is, and he's been on the show a couple of times, and he always makes reference to messianic moments. And of course, a messianic moment is when we go out of our way not to take away somebody else's dignity.
But, right.
You know, he told, when he was on the show, he told about a 30-second story when he was in the hospital, and he was in the waiting room, and he observed how people had nothing. They had no commonalities when he looked around.
Right.
You had older people, younger people, small people, large people, black people, white people, all kinds of people, some disabled, some looking like basketball players. They were all over the place. And after about a half hour, they asked about each other.
Yeah.
How's your wife doing?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, your son's going to be okay. That's great. Somebody right. would go up and go to the vending machine mm-hmm. and ask the person next to him, can I get you a cup of coffee?
Right.
All of a sudden, they became human beings.
Exactly.
Now, as simple as that sounds,
exactly.
I think that's what you're talking
yeah,
about.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, I'll tell you a funny story. When I was visiting patients at the hospital up at Methodist, they pull lists of different faiths and, you know, if people want to be visited by yeah. a clergy. And one day I went in and I picked up a list and I went to the first room and I remember thinking, that's not really a Jewish name, but, you know, so I talked to this guy, and he seemed pretty talk. And then I go to the next room, and I was like, I don't want to be, I'm, you know, chastising myself for being judgmental, but this woman doesn't look Jewish, right? Mm-hmm. Finally, I go to the third one, and there's a woman, and she's with very difficult breathing and everything, and she, I said, what congregation do you belong to? And it turns out that I had been visiting Jehovah's Witnesses
uh-huh. yeah.
instead of the yeah. Jews by mistake.
Right, right. Yeah, that's funny. And so what do they think of you?
You know what? It wasn't substantially different than anything that I would have done with a non-Jew. That's it. No, I mean, I can always, there are cultural differences, right?
Yep.
There are definitely, like, I mean, you know, our own people have their own little quirks and they can drive me crazy.
You
and
think?
I know. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you think?
I've had
uh-huh.
calls and I can tell you exactly who they're talking yeah. about. And I don't even know the person.
Right.
But the need to break free of isolation, mm-hmm. right? And to find a, you know, commonality with someone based on what's yeah. going on with you internally is universal.
Yeah. And I think that's beautiful. You know, Lord Jonathan Sacks, leader of the British and World Rabbinate, as we mm-hmm. know, asserted that God has given us many faiths, but only one world in which to coexist, and we must cherish our commonalities and
yeah.
feel enlarged by our differences. And I think mm-hmm. that's a beautiful, beautiful thought.
Yeah.
This is Hank Rubinchek along with Essential Sidekick Roxy Russell, and you are enjoying Interfaith Anecdotes, magically delivered by Rabbi Laura Sheinkoff on So What's Your Story, KPFT 90.1 FM or KPFT.org for those of you using that avenue. But whatever road you took to tune in, we thank you for being with us. Roxy, this is a tough question, but I'm going to ask you anyway. What impressed you about Rabbi Laura at the Moth? Okay.
Honestly, no. Okay.
I told you only had a second. What's the matter with you?
Because the first impression I got of you said, you know, I love my job, but I hate it at the same time, or something along those lines. It was a bittersweet, and you talked about something that was a vice, but also you could see the passion behind it. And now, no matter, you know, because we all have jobs that we're just like, I hate, but I love it. But it was just honestly magical and refreshing to see yeah. someone of faith be able to say, yeah, I hate my job sometimes, but then, like, truly, like, you saw how much you loved
it.
That
is so wonderful. Did you look at the dictionary this week?
I did. I wrote out.
I'm telling you. I mean, that is so. Who are you?
Bone up my game.
Who are you?
See,
yeah,
here's the thing.
We always pick on Roxy. That was so beautiful, beautiful. The Moth is a great venue, as you know, but we even have a better one, right, Roxy? Tell us what we're talking about, please.
If you're talking about the Houston Storytellers Guild, then you're right. It's the place to learn and tell while hanging with the most supportive people in town. Monthly swaps are held the third Tuesday of every month from 7 to 8:30 p.m. at St. Andrew's House, located on 1811 Heights Boulevard. And check out the Houston Storytellers Guild site at www.houstonstorytellers.org for all the fun happenings, like their annual Liars Contest on Saturday, April 5th. And visit us on our So What's Your Story Facebook page for great information about storytelling, and please like us on your way out.
Yeah, like us a lot. Thank you, Roxy. I appreciate it so much. And the next meeting, by the way, is this Tuesday, so we'd love to see you. And Rabbi Laura, you need to come. If you
yeah.
can't come, this, I'm telling you, it's a great, great venue. It really is. You know, Roxy has come, and she's actually learned something about storytelling
yes,
just watching us.
Mm-hmm.
Not that we know anything about it, but speaking of not knowing yeah. about anything, Roxy, it's time for Tip for the Tellers. When I pretend to know something about storytelling by answering a question sent in by one of our listeners, and tonight,
Hank, Brian from Houston asks, Dr. Hank, how cool is your show?
I don't know, Brian, how cool is it?
I am a teacher and would appreciate you clarifying the difference between a theme and a motive.
Okay, well, I want to make sure I don't screw up your students. So I actually wrote down some notes here rather than taking everybody on a fanciful journey into the unknown. I'll make it short and hopefully clear. Although the theme is the central idea of a story, Brian, the idea can be vague. Whereas a motif or a symbolic thread, as I like to refer to it, is concrete. If the theme of a story is time moving at a relentless clip, for example, the motif in the story could be the ticking of a clock. The theme, fractured family, may be reinforced by the motif of fragmentation, as in shattered glass, an unfaithful spouse, or runaway teen. I really hope that's helped. I know that's quick, but you know what? That is a great question. And I have to say that I'm so impressed by a lot of our callers, our teachers, and that's the truth. And I love the fact that they care about human expression. Thank you, Brian. Roxy, if you've got a question, why don't you tell people what they need to do, please?
If you have a question you want Dr. Hank to answer on the air or would like to be on, a guest on So What's Your Story, send your name, contact information, question, or story idea to ruby.story@gmail.com. Now that's ruby.story@gmail.com.
What can you do with 30 seconds? Have you got a 30-second anecdote?
Sure.
Oh, I figured. Go ahead. 30-second anecdote.
I saw what, a Cape Cod one or what? Or
make us laugh, make us cry.
Okay, okay. All right, so I grew up on the Cape, and it's a man-made island. You have to go over a bridge. Mm-hmm. There's a rotary, and it has a huge tacky sign in the middle that says, "Welcome to Cape Cod." Mm-hmm. And my dad and my grandfather, who didn't really know how to drive, and this, you know, he was an immigrant, they went in 1960-something to look at the Cape for the first time, and they it was snowing, and they drove around the rotary and skidded out and Ooh. Plowed through the center. And the Welcome to Cape Cod sign landed on the windshield. And my grandfather said to my dad, "David, was ist das?" in Yiddish. And my dad said, "It's a sign." And that's why they moved to Cape Cod.
No kidding.
That's what I've heard.
That's amazing.
That is the story in our family. I don't know how true it is.
I have no doubt. I wish we had time, and we will, because you're going to come back. You are coming back, aren't you?
Sure.
You are? What do you mean, sure? You got nothing
else?
Yeah,
well, no, I do. I have it booked. On Thursday nights are very busy.
Okay.
Because I'm so young. Very, very busy.
I love it.
Going to the next
one. Because we really do have to share stories. You've given me a really great idea, frankly, because I've got some excellent stories I want to share with you that are not unlike the way that your family moved to Cape Cod, believe it or not, and that's going to be just marvelous. You know, my concluding thought is from the Dalai Lama. My religion is very simple. My religious is kindness.
Yeah.
I think we can all agree with that, right?
Yes.
Be kind. Be kind, Roxy. Always be kind.
I try.
I know you do. Now, Brendan Bork-Scheel, writer, storyteller, and another moth find. Roxy finds all these people at the moth. She finds people unemployed. She finds rabbis.
It's a gold mine for storytellers.
It is. There's some very interesting people.
Well, he's going to be here next week, gracing our studio on So What's Your Story, followed by more moth people, right? We have two more after that, and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. Rabbi, this was so great.
Yes, thank you for having me. This was so incredibly cool.
Actually, you're a very cool rabbi, and I just want people to know that that is possible. You can be cool, any clergy person, all in the same frame. You're allowed to do that.
Right.
I just wanted people to know that.
Right.
But you offered us wit, wisdom, spiritual guidance, I think. And I really am hoping that you come back, maybe during the holidays. I think that would be a great thing to do and offer us a terrific theme. You're a role model teller, I think. And thank you, Roxy, for your skill and for schlepping to the moth. You have no idea what the word schlepping means. It's a totally good word. It's a Yiddish word, and I'll have to talk to you about schlepping, schlemiel, schlemazel, all those words that start with an S-H, and one day we'll tune
There's going to be a quiz.
Right. Oh, my God.
When I come
Don't
back.
You dare move. Don't anybody move, because Scooter is in the studio. I saw him. He's up next with the Inner Side to complete the back side of this Power Hour on KPFT. Make 90.1 a part of every day and make it a habit to tune in every Thursday at 10 p.m. for So What's Your Story? And ease into the weekend right. Keep loving a great story, and I'm going to keep bringing them to you. Be good to each other. I'm Dr. Hank, reminding you that it is never too late to live happily ever after. Good night.